Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Romeo by Ruby Rowe, narrated by Elizabeth Hart and Aidan Snow. Chapter 1. Ava.
That's a wrap,
Director Newman exclaims. I join in with the cast and crew, applauding and smiling. The Los Angeles air seems lighter in seconds, the stress dissipating as it takes a back seat to my alleviation.
What's next?
My co-star Drake asks as he touches my arm. Like always, there's a glimmer of flirtation in his dark brown eyes. Tonight's party and my long overdue staycation.
You know what I meant.
Yes, but I'm not sure what's next since the roles are getting few and far between. Smiling at another cast member walking by, I fool with a strand of my blonde extensions.
I can envision us starring in a drama together,
he says.
We should write a screenplay.
I'll think about it. My assistant, Holly, is hovering nearby, so I step out of Drake's reach. I have to go. I don't give him a chance to respond. I'd love to be cast in an award-winning drama, but I'm losing faith in nailing a role like that, especially at my age. Not to mention it'd be another opportunity for Drake to make a pass at me, and I'm not interested. It's hard enough being intimate with him on camera. I can hear Holly's flats on the asphalt behind me as I head to my trailer. I feel the warmth of the sun on my skin, and deep breaths are once again hard to come by. As if Holly knows, she catches up with me and hands me a bottle of water. Her high auburn ponytail is falling, and she's sweating too. My relief over having the filming behind me is brief as I think about what that also means. I'm another year older. 40 and 2 months, to be exact. In Hollywood, it might as well be 60. Send Newman's wife flowers. He mentioned she had back surgery a week ago, I say. Got it. Her tone is clipped, reminding me that she's as ready as I am to have this film completed. You can leave for the day. I'll text you if I need anything. Are you sure? Yes. Take tomorrow off, too. Frank, who's my bodyguard and head of my security team, holds open the door to my trailer for me. I'll be ready to leave in 20, I say to him.
I'll call Harold.
His tone is short, and I'm beginning to think my staff needs a vacation from me. Alone in my trailer, I wipe the sweat from my upper lip and march to the bathroom. I pee and then stare at my tired green eyes in the small mirror above the sink. Out of sight, out of mind, I mumble. As much as I shouldn't take time off work, my body is telling me I need the break. About the time I exit the bathroom, there's a knock on my door. Come in. Are you ready to get those extensions removed for the last time? My hairstylist and close friend Bonnie asks. Please. Taking a seat in the makeup chair, I look in the mirror as she comes up behind me. Her eyes light up. Oh, flowers. Have you read the card yet? No, but Frank said they're from Oliver. My ex's ass kissing isn't as enjoyable as it was in the beginning. She's piqued my interest, so I lean over and swipe the card from the bouquet of a dozen yellow roses. As I suspected, it's a note of groveling. Of course, we both know they were only sent as a peace offering. He's hoping they'll give my honest mouth a filter, but he can forget it. He cheated with that young gold digger, so I'll deal with the humiliation while the tabloids splash the news on every cover. If it hurts his reputation and career, it'll be worth it. He's such a wuss. Do you know the man wouldn't even get near my ass while we were together? I'll talk and no play. Covering her mouth, Bonnie snickers and places a handful of my long extensions on the salon station in front of me. She begins combing her fingers through my chin-length blonde hair while I admire her long, fiery red strands in the mirror. I better never piss you off. You have so much dirt on me, I say to her with a wink.
To the grave, sister.
I wish my own sister followed that sentiment. I think she'd rather put me in the grave. Family is overrated. Bonnie stares back at me in the mirror with her hands on my shoulders. Reaching back, I pat the top of one. Thank you for feeding me bullshit. Now feed me more and tell me this party is going to be enjoyable. You're going to have a fabulous time, darling, she says in a drawn-out, dramatic voice. You're a terrible actress, but I'm lucky you're a great friend. After she makes my hair presentable, I give her a hug and change into some ankle jeans and a silky pink tank. Slipping on my white pumps, I grab my Fendi satchel bag and open the trailer door. As Frank watches me take the two steps down to the ground, he speaks through the mic on his cuff to the other guard who's with our driver. In 2 minutes, Harold pulls up next to us, and I notice how the black town car shines. Frank opens the back door for me, and I get inside before he joins me, taking a seat on the passenger side. Do you think my stalker Romeo is in that crowd? I ask him as we drive off. There's a small group of fans and paparazzi huddled just outside the gate, and I imagine they're here to see my famous young co-star, Sydney Sinclair.
I wish I knew. I want him behind bars, but not before I get my hands on him.
Harold picks up speed, and once we turn onto Melrose Avenue, we escape the herd of onlookers. I settle into the leather seat and pull out my phone. Frank and the other guard, who's sitting up front, and whose name I can't remember, make small talk while I check my email. It becomes quiet, and after a minute or two, Frank shuts the partition.
We need to talk.
I glance at him, and as soon as I see his earnest expression, I drop my phone into my bag. Okay, talk.
I'm resigning.
What? You can't. I mean, please don't.
I'm sorry. I know it's terrible timing with the Romeo situation, but I have to step down. I've met someone, so the hours and travel are no longer feasible.
His salt and pepper hair is well kept, like always, so when he pushes his short bangs farther to the side, I know he's nervous. Wow. Okay. Biting the corner of my lip, I look out the window. I don't know what to do. I don't trust anyone the way I trust you.
I know a replacement. His name is Griffin Scott. He's professional, an all-around great guy, and I trust him completely. He was Mindy Velasquez's bodyguard for the last 2 years.
After working for her, I guess he would have experience. I think Mindy publicly humiliated herself in every major city on the planet.
He resigned. He wouldn't say why, but I believe it was from Ms. Velasquez's out-of-control partying. I'm sure she kept him on high alert all hours of the night.
If he wouldn't tell you, then that means he's discreet.
He didn't breathe a word, other than the fact he was looking for work and desired a more low-key client. I met him at the gym about a year ago. When we realized we were in the same profession, we began hanging out. Well, we do when we're in town at the same time. Once I considered retiring, I knew he'd be a great fit. I trust him.
If you feel that certain, then I'll have Holly schedule an interview.
Thank you. I think you'll be impressed by him.
Will he hover less than you? This comment earns me a rare chuckle from Frank. His relief over our talk shows in his smile and reaches his hazel eyes.
I can't promise. He's taken down more than one pushy fan from Ms. Velasquez. I've seen videos of him in action.
Being my bodyguard should be a walk in the park after dealing with her. I smile. Well, as long as he keeps me safe. Does he know who my father is?
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
I nod. Right. He would think I'd remember that the world knows every detail of my life, including how my father is a mobster. Teddy Titus Leone. He's getting too old to break legs, but he has the manpower beneath him to kill the poor bastard who tries to harm me, along with the bodyguard who failed to keep me safe. It was a risk Frank was willing to take. Will this Griffin be as brave? I place my hand on Frank's bicep. If he gets the position, will you bring him up to speed on Romeo?
Of course. Mr. Scott won't let that psycho anywhere near you.
Griffin. My sweet pet, your body looks incredible strapped to that bench, especially your bare ass.
Thank you, sir.
Colleen does look incredible this way. She's on her stomach with her arms tucked against her sides. She's in a black tank top and purple skirt, which is flipped up, revealing only a thong and her flesh. I've secured her tightly to the wooden bench with rope at her biceps, thighs, and ankles. I'm going to turn her ass pink with a paddle. I've been building up her tolerance at Dungeon 6, where we're both members. We enjoy doing scenes together, but it's not often we get the chance since I'm usually out of town, guarding my principal. On nights I do arrive at the club, her light brown eyes exude excitement and anticipation. After I've changed clothes, I always find her waiting near the bathroom door, hoping I'll ask her to do a scene with me. She's younger than I'd prefer, but her overly submissive behavior draws me to her. What is your safe word? I move her straight, dark ponytail from over her shoulder to down the center of her back. Her cheek is pressed to the wooden bench, and she's staring up at me as I stand to her side.
Onion.
I crack a smile. I'm beginning to wonder if you're a gardener by day. Either that or you work in the produce section of a grocery store. If I recall correctly, your last safe word was broccoli.
That's correct. About the broccoli. I don't work with vegetables. I only choose those safe words because they make you smile. They're the only times I see you smile.
My humor vanishes. It's time for your ass to be spanked. Her eyes close as I bring the paddle down, but I believe they shut more from shame than anticipation. Like most of the women before her, she's become attached. Being a bodyguard is my passion, my duty. I don't have time to meet the needs of a sub, and it's what she's hoping I'll ask her to be. My submissive. I should have realized what was happening from her eagerness. I show restraint on the first two hits, but the aggravation over her comment grows within me, so the third strike is much harder. The thud of it draws a few people near us. They stand at the front of the open room as I face them from behind the bench. On the fourth hit, Colleen clenches her ass, and her forehead scrunches. I'm pushing her to her limit, and that gives me a rush. But it doesn't squelch my frustration. Turn your head to face the crowd so they can see your beautiful face. More people have joined at the front of the room to watch our scene, so I use it as an excuse for her to turn away. The reality is that I don't want to see her face. It's revealing her disappointment, which is interfering with our play. My anger isn't helping either. If we were to do another scene together, Colleen would be pouty, and the time after that she'd be pissed. This is the third woman this year who's wanted more from me, and it's only late May. I bring the paddle down the fifth time, and she yelps. Realizing that I'm no longer doing this for the right reasons, I stop. We're finished. Lie still.
But you only gave me 5 spankings.
You manipulated me with your safe words. Are you questioning my decision and authority, too?
No, sir.
She mutters with shame. Setting the paddle down on a chair nearby, I pick up a bottle of lotion. I squirt it in my hands and warm it before I begin to massage her ass. She whimpers as the crowd silently watches me provide her aftercare. Once I'm finished, I help her up, and she straightens her clothes. Her head is lowered, so I lift her chin. We need to talk. Nodding in return, her eyes meet mine. You may go while I clean up. I add. She disappears from the room, and as I sanitize the bench, I think about what I'll say to her. I shouldn't be angry that she wants me to be her dom. It's an honor, and maybe the right woman would make me crave the same thing. But since I don't feel that for Colleen, she's not that woman. My job comes first. Well, presently, I'm between principals, but the plan for me to become Ava Lane's bodyguard was put into motion. It's a bonus that Ms. Lane seems like the perfect match for me as a client. She's older, and Frank claims she's calmer than the young pop star I've been guarding for the last couple of years. That crazy woman was going to cost me my life. I walk around the common area, looking for Colleen. She's at a small table watching a couple play in the first of the three rooms, but as much as her eyes are fixed on them, I sense her mind is elsewhere. Unfortunately, I'll tell her what I tell the others who fall for me. I can't be your dom, and I can't do a scene with you ever again.
Chapter 2. Ava. After resting at home for a few hours, Frank and I leave for the wrap-up party. On the way, he tells me about the woman he's dating. Although I'm saddened by his resignation, I'm thrilled he's found happiness. He's 45 and has finally met someone he wants to settle down with. It's wonderful, but it means I'm in need of a new bodyguard. I could promote a man on my security detail, but it's not what Frank recommended, which means he doesn't think any of them are qualified. I trust his judgment, so I'll interview Mr. Scott. Before we arrive at the venue, I reapply my pink lipstick and smooth out the lace bodice of my royal blue cocktail dress. Since I haven't had children, my boobs are still perky, but I wouldn't be disappointed if they were a cup size bigger. We pull up at the entrance of the nightclub on Sunset. Some of the taping of my film, First Comes Love, was captured here, so PR thought it'd be the ideal place to hold the party. It's close to the general public tonight, and I'm happy to see there are only a few paparazzi out front. A flash goes off in my face.
"Ms. Lane," a cameraman says. "Will Oliver Harvey be joining you inside tonight?"
"Oliver who?" Flashing a sly smile, I continue to the door with two bodyguards at my side. Frank will stay close while Kellen keeps watch from the sidelines. The room is all abuzz as we enter the club. I spot the gold fountain of champagne and hear the voices of arrogance as they challenge the decibels of the jazz music. I wonder if I'm the only one who is over this song and dance of pleasantries to get ahead. Shit, what's wrong with me? I feel cynical, lost, and unsettled. What do I need that I don't already possess? Caught off guard by my bubbling emotions, I swallow them down and conjure up the sweetheart smile the world expects to see from me. Like he's reading my anxious mind, a server approaches with a tray of champagne flutes. Frank hovers, worried the young man could be a threat, so I shoot him a look to back off. My safety might be in question these days, but I doubt whoever is stalking me is disguised as this waiter. No, I think the person who's after me has a more elaborate plan than wanting to off me in public. The deranged letters tell a tale much sicker and drawn out. "Ava, you look stunning," Sydney says to me. "Thank you, sweet pea." I exchange kisses on the cheek with my young actress friend, who sidled up to me in the first movie we starred in together. I was cast as her older sister, and I've become a surrogate sibling to her. She's adorable and clever, so I continuously bury my irritation over how several major film roles have gone to her instead of me. I prefer when she's riding my coattails, like in this film where she has the supporting role alongside me. "How's the entertainment so far?" I ask. "Let's see. Rumor has it Jeannie Jones already flashed a boob. She's such a slut." Jeannie is Sydney's arch-nemesis. They're both 25 and always vying for acting gigs. They're parts neither of them would have secured when I was a few years younger. Those roles would have gone to me. "Oh, and Mark and Eli have been taking selfies and tweeting as usual. Nothing too over the top. She eyes Frank, and a smile curves from her plump with silicone lips. How's it hanging, Frank? Catch any stalkers lately?
Good evening, Miss Sinclair.
His pleasantry is all she gets, as his eyes scan for possible threats. Sydney's 3 inches shorter than my 5'7" frame, so I lean down to her ear. Leave the man alone, I whisper. Sid prefers older men, so she loves to flirt with him. She can never get a rise out of Frank, though, which makes him a challenge for her to conquer. She'll be disappointed once she learns of his parting. It's frustrating having a bodyguard at my side, especially at parties, but it's imperative right now. I receive a threatening letter or package at least once a week. Of course, I hear about this through the grapevine. Frank and my security team inspect every piece of mail before it's delivered to me. I'm just waiting for one of the guys to lose an arm from an explosive device planted by my stalker. The packages are getting that scary. The last box he sent contained a small bottle with a poison skull design on the front. Security took a photo to show me, and it gave me chills. It didn't help that the letter enclosed spoke of us dying minutes apart, like in Romeo and Juliet. For that reason, we're calling him Romeo. If I'm ever suspicious of someone, I'm to say the word Romeo, which signals to Frank that I'm in trouble. I've only had to do it once, when a fan followed me around a clothing boutique. Frank was trying to give me space since I was in the lingerie department. The man hovered nearby as I looked at panties. I called out, Romeo, and my bodyguards tackled him. I had to pay out a settlement for the guy's broken nose. He ended up being a paparazzi we weren't familiar with. Close your legs. Mickey is headed our way, Sydney mutters, before she sweeps a stray hand of her strawberry blonde hair back into her updo. Shit. Mickey's my serial ex, who came long before my most recent ex, Oliver. Mick's the man who can still make my pelvis clench after all these years, but to this day we're like oil and water. When we weren't having sex, we were plotting each other's demise. It was that damn volatile.
Ava, you look lovely this evening,
he says, as he slips an arm around my waist and pulls me close. Frank isn't going to intervene unless I motion for him to, since he knows Mickey and I have a long history. Mick, how are you?
Good.
He looks to Sid.
Hello, Miss Sinclair.
Good evening, Mr. DeLuca. When are you going to cut the formal shit? You know I'm not a lady. I bump her shoulder. No, he doesn't know that, and the public doesn't either, so behave yourself. Smirking, she takes a sip of her martini.
Your father is somewhere in this room,
Mickey says, as he glances around and holds up his glass of booze. His espresso brown hair is haphazardly styled, yet it's sexy as always. We began dating when I was 18, soon after he became my father's consigliera, or right-hand man, you could call it. When I was 26, I moved to Hollywood, and we continued our relationship long distance until 8 years ago when he, my father, and my ill mother moved to L.A. after rumors of looming indictments. You'd think finally being with Mickey full-time would have made our relationship stronger, but instead it provided more opportunities to fight and for me to witness his infidelity. I'm not surprised you know his whereabouts before me. He narrows his sandy brown eyes on mine, but his mouth quirks into a smile, giving away his light-heartedness. The man's so damn attractive, especially for 47. If only he'd loved me enough to behave.
Oh, come on. Let's play nice this evening.
Leaning farther into my personal space, he whispers in my ear.
We can play even nicer later tonight if you're game.
I notice how he used the word game. Knowing him, he has a wager with someone as to whether or not he can get me into bed tonight. I have other plans, I pull away from him.
That's not what I've been seeing on the television.
Since when do you believe everything you see on TV? Just because I'm not with Oliver doesn't mean I have no life. Actually, my personal life is a wasteland, but I'm certainly not bowing down to him because of it.
Fair enough.
He tilts his glass toward me.
One of these days, you'll want to reminisce.
Possibly, when I'm bored, but until then, I better mingle.
Damn, I love your smart mouth.
Bye, Mickey. Walking away, I take one last glimpse of him over my shoulder, wishing things could be different. Much like my father, he's a gambler and womanizer. Bets and prostitutes get their dicks hard. My father can predict the outcome of a horse race better than a jockey, and he and Mickey often travel together to races. My ex also wanted to marry me and start a family, and that was a hell no. I wasn't raising kids with a man who squandered money and stuck his cock where it didn't belong. And most importantly, I wasn't bearing a child with a mobster. Unfortunately, I'm reminded often that Mickey is the best lay I've ever had since I see him regularly. He happens to be a producer, mostly thanks to me and my connections. Spotting my distinguished father across the room, I decide to get our greeting over with. I push through the crowd while watching him laugh with two other men. His hair has receded greatly over the last year, and what's left is much grayer. But overall, L.A.'s been good for his health. Although it's nearly unheard of for a mobster to leave his home turf, it was the smartest decision he ever made, a move that kept him out of prison. Victor, who's my father's underboss and my sister's boyfriend, took over the reins of our mafia family in New York. Daddy, how are you?
I'm good, baby doll.
My father kisses my forehead. I give the two men beside him a smile before they disperse. I assume Mickey invited you?
Yes, but I came to celebrate your accomplishment.
I wish I could believe him, but I'm second in line at best. How's Mother?
Weak today, so I told her to stay home.
This is another delusion of my father's. He's always left my mother at home. It's not only now, while her multiple sclerosis is getting the best of her. That's just his convenient excuse. I'll call her before I turn in. Enjoy the party.
Bye, sweetheart.
Giving a faint kiss to his cheek, I leave him be. That's all the elbow rubbing I can handle tonight. I'm tired and eager to begin the brief staycation I'm taking. Frank, please call Harold to bring the car around. I'm ready to go home.
Yes, ma'am.
I exchange a few words and nods with my famous peers as I make my way to the exit. Overall, I guess my life is one that most people could only dream of having, but it still lacks luster. It's missing something, and probably because it's mostly pretend. I act out characters who aren't like me, and often spend time with people I don't care to see. I wear a fake smile, even on the worst of days, because a camera is always in my face. Since leaving the mob life in New York years ago, I've only been known in L.A. as the wholesome, famous actress, Ava Lane. I'm a woman who behaves, but I'm ready for something exciting. I plan to push my limits and discover the woman Ava Lane Leone truly is.
Chapter 3. Ava. My young housekeeper, Janelle, informs me that Mr. Scott is here for his interview, so I take the stairs to the first floor and walk out to where she seated him on the veranda. Noticing my presence, Mr. Scott stands, and when our eyes meet, my mouth falls open. Realizing my reaction, I snap it shut and clear my throat. I'm used to seeing starstruck expressions when people meet me, but by far, this is the other way around. This man is undeniably attractive. Hi, I'm Ava Lane.
Griffin Scott, thank you for meeting with me.
His light blue eyes are locked with mine, his gaze serious. As I step closer in my heels, I get a better look at him.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?